Welcome, everyone, to the City of South Jordan City Council meeting. We're meeting in the City Council chambers. Today is Tuesday, February 7th, 2023. We welcome everyone here who's in attendance with us. We also welcome anyone who's participating virtually. We excuse our mayor, who is unavailable to be with us today. We have all of our wonderful council members here today, so thank you for being here. We will go ahead and start with an invocation by Council Member Zander.
Thank you. Our dear gracious Heavenly Father, we're so grateful for the opportunity this evening to gather peacefully to discuss the affairs of our city. We are grateful for thy blessings here upon us, grateful to live in this beautiful land, in this wonderful city, in this great state of Utah. We pray for our elected officials locally and statewide and federally. Bless those that have good desires and bless them to make wise decisions, and we pray for thy blessings to be with us this night in this council chambers, that the public, our residents, and elected officials and staff, that we can have a harmonious environment, that we can discuss the needs at hand, and that we can have understanding and wisdom as we do so. We pray for thy blessings to be upon our first responders, specifically our fire and police, that keep our city safe and serve the public so well. We're so grateful for those men and women who do so much for the safety and security of our city and for all of us. We ask thee to please bless those who may be in harm's way at this time, and we're grateful for those who serve us abroad in our military. We thank thee for these favors and blessings. We're grateful for the health and strength that we have to be here this night. Grateful for this form of government that we enjoy, and help us to always have gratitude and respect for what our founding fathers have given us, and that we can uphold and maintain these freedoms that we enjoy. And these things we pray for and thank thee for in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Council Member Zander. We'll now have Associate Director Jacob Druce lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Please stand and repeat the Pledge of Allegiance with me.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
We'll now move on to item D, the minute approval. Council, is there any amendments or any comments on the minutes?
I do have a question maybe for staff. I don't know who prepares the minutes after each meeting and the draft minutes. I wonder if would it be possible to have the attachments that are referenced in the draft minutes be part of that package so that we reference that when we're looking through the minutes?
Yes, we can make that happen.
That'd be great. Thank you. Yep. Otherwise, I didn't find any problems in the minutes. So.
Okay. Because I was especially looking forward to Anna's translation of Chinese from my last meeting. And so that would have been great to have had in there as the attachment.
Yeah, I generally will attach them after the minutes are approved because it makes some of those presentations, it's going to make the minutes, when we attach the attachments, it's going to make the minutes that much longer. So in the past, we have uploaded them to share file for you to be able to refer to, but I can start attaching them in the packet.
Or if there's, even if there's a link in the packet to a share file like you referenced,
yeah.
I'd be great with that, just so... So that, you know, when I read through and I say see attachment, whatever, I'd like to be able to just click it quick to refresh my memory of what I see in that attachment.
Yeah. Yep. I'll do that moving forward with the packet.
That'd be great.
Call it control.
Well, if there are no other comments or amendments, I'll entertain a motion.
Mayor Pro Tem Harris, I move that we approve our minutes for the January 17th, City Council study meeting, the January 17th City Council meeting, and the January 31st City Council budget meeting.
Okay. I have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay. All in favor, say aye.
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 Okay. Minutes are approved. Okay. We will now move on to item E, mayor and council reports. We'll go ahead and start over with at that end. Go ahead,
okay.
Jason.
Just a minute. Pulling up my calendar to refresh my memory. So since our last meeting, I was able to attend the Harriman High School Chinese New Year celebration. That was a great event. Also had the budget meeting last week in which the rest of the council members were also present. And I believe... Oh, and had the opportunity to attend the circus that was in town. And while it's not an official South Jordan event, just grateful to have the equestrian park in the city and for Utah State University continuing to offer programming at the facility and allowing the Jordan World Circus to come back into town. And that was a great event.
Okay.
And that's everything.
Thank you. Councilmember Zander?
Yes. Let me look up one date really quick. Okay, not quite sure the date, but yes. I don't have a lot to report. I'm kind of the city representative on the South Valley Chamber of Commerce, and I sit on the business committee for the South Valley Chamber of Commerce, and just want to report that that's going well. The members of the business community in South Jordan that are sitting on the South Valley Chamber of Commerce have organized an event coming up in March. And I'm looking on my calendar. I can't remember. I believe it's March 8th, but I'll let you know for sure next time. They've organized a kind of a celebration recognition night for the veterans in the city of South Jordan. They've recognized that we have a veterans clinic, a VA clinic at the U of U Hospital in Daybreak, and with that new VA clinic, they wanted to do something to acknowledge, recognize, and celebrate and thank the veterans in our city. So that will be our first ever veterans dinner and event. We have dinner that's going to be volunteers supplying that. We have a comedian, a fantastic comedian, that's going to come and entertain the veterans that night who's volunteered his services. So I'll give more details on that when it comes, and find out if we're all invited. I know I am, but I think all of you, if any of you would like to go, let me know and I can give you
I
details.
I definitely would like more information.
Okay, I'll give that to you. Aside from that, this morning I attended 8:30 this morning. They had the business accelerator class for anyone in South Jordan City that's got their own business, self-employed entrepreneurs attending that. Again, another service by the South Valley Chamber of Commerce. And that's all I have to report, Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you. Mr. Marlin.
Have just a couple things. Excuse me. On the 25th, I did attend the Architectural Review Committee meeting. We had one new building that we approved and moving forward on. Nice to see something's happening with all the kind of negative that's going on with the Federal Reserve rate changes and things. We're still moving forward here in South Jordan, so that's great. And I think it was since we met last that we actually had the Utah League of Cities and Towns. So anyway,
it was.
Attended that lunch. We had the quite a few members of the Youth Council that were there. That was a lot of fun. A number of our legislators, and I think we have a good relationship with them. They always they still want to sit by us anyway, and so. Something must be good. Something must be right there. So always good to see them.
Councilmember Barnger, I believe all of our legislators attended and sat at our table.
They
were
one
looking
of them
for each of
that
you.
That represents South Jordan. Yeah.
Thank you for inviting them.
Great representation on their part, and I think it speaks well that they would come sit with us and break bread, as we say. So had an opportunity actually to have lunch with a couple of our outstanding Planning Commission members over the last 2 weeks, and so that was very enlightening. Talked a lot about ways that we need to collaborate better with the Planning Commission. I also attended the budget meeting. I guess that was, last Wednesday. Very well done. I think we're able to get through those meetings and plan better and better and better. And so I really appreciate the staff and the great job that that they do. Actually had an opportunity to go on a tour with one of the prominent developers here in the city who has some really great ideas and some wonderful things that will, I think, enhance, ameliorate the city in years to come. And so I appreciated that opportunity. And finally, not on a city councilman basis, but I'm of the age where I actually applied for Social Security Medicare, believe it or not. I know that's hard to believe, but it was an interesting experience because when I was born, my dad was actually in the U.S. Navy. I was born in the Philippine Islands. And so I went in to apply, and I, of course, handed my my birth certificate, and the individual there at Social Security looked at it, and he said, well, I need to go talk with one of my managers. And so he went back, and 20 minutes later, believe it or not, came back, and he says, well, your birth certificate does prove that you were born, and you were born in the Philippine Islands, and all of that is accurate. The only problem is the Social Security office doesn't recognize you as a U.S. citizen. And that was a little bit disturbing, frankly. I've been paying into Social Security for over 50 years, and so that was a bit disturbing. And actually, after we talked through it, instead of petitioning the State Department, believe it or not, all I needed to do was bring in my passport, which proved that I was a U.S. citizen. So I am now set up.
You're not going to be deported.
Yeah. I won't be taking financial benefits, but I'll at least be on Medicare, and that's what you're supposed to do when you turn 65. So that's my report, Council and Mayor Pro Tem.
Okay. Thank you. All right. I'll go ahead and go. I also attend the Utah Leagues of Cities and Towns meeting that we had downtown. It was nice to be with our legislators and kind of understand as they're in session about the things that are important to them, that we're able to kind of, you know, talk to them about the things that are important to us in our city, and so we can help shape things as well as we possibly can. It's also good to hear from the governor. The one thing I love about the governor is how positive he is on the outlook of the state of Utah. As you compare Utah to other states, we're in a very good situation. He's very optimistic, so it's always good to hear that kind of reassurance as well. Attended the budget meeting as everyone else did, and also attended the sewer board meeting, and everything is going well with the sewer. If the things weren't going well with the sewer, you would all be letting us know. So, and that's my comments. I'll turn the time over to Mr. Shelton.
I'm really grateful that everything's going well at the sewer board. That's great. And I'm glad that you're official, Brad.
Yes.
That we don't have to kick you off the council or something like that. Anyway, I also attended the luncheon and the budget meeting, and there have been three legislative policy committee meetings since our last meeting, and I've been part of those. I think
I've been part of them. I just tried.
Mr. McGuire has been as well. Yeah, so I've been involved with those. I did attend the Jordan River Commission meeting this last Thursday, and I was elected as the vice chair of the Jordan River Commission. So.
Congratulations.
Anyway, I think.
Yeah.
It means another meeting that may mess with my ski days. I can't have that. But anyway. I had a chance to take the same tour that Mr. Marler did with the developer. And that's That's my report.
Okay. All right. We'll now move on to item F, the public comment portion of our meeting. This meeting is for anyone who'd like to address the council. And this is for any items that are there was not another public hearing set. So if there's an agenda item that you're here to talk about, we'll have a separate public hearing item for that. So if you're here to talk about anything else, we'll ask you to limit your time to 3 minutes. And we just ask that we all are residents of South Jordan here together, and we ask that we just keep our comments, you know, civil while we're in here in these chambers. So the time is now yours.
Good evening, City Council. It's my pleasure to be here this evening. My name is Don Reese. My address is 10674 South, 1055 West. My wife and I have resided there for the past 52 years. This is a follow-up on a meeting that I had on January 25th with Gary Watcott and two city planners, and we were talking about 1055 West. That's still a real concern for us. It was decided in that meeting that Mr. Watcott would forward the letter from the citizens to the mayor and the city council. And I'm here for a couple of reasons this evening. Number one, I want to find out if you received that letter from Gary. If you would show by hands, I would appreciate that.
I sent it by email. Yeah,
email.
I received it.
Okay. And did you get a chance, number two, to read it? What that represents 40 members of 1055 West that's very concerned. We're concerned that the options that we talk about in that letter should be addressed by the city. It should be noted in the minutes tonight that 98% of the people on the street who reside there have signed this letter. We have 40 signatures of people who want to be heard. They want to be heard on the idea that you need to look at that street that runs from 1055 West to the new subdivision on our street. There are some real concerns about that. If you would address that, we would be happy to address that with you. We have copies if you'd like to look at it. My time is running out. I would appreciate that you would at least answer us back on that, because the 40 citizens are concerned that the safety issues have not been addressed properly. Thank you.
Good evening. I was up here a few months ago and mentioned that I, along with a few others, had formed a group called Bike Walk Southwest Valley. Since then, we have reduced both the geographical scope of our group and the length of our name.
Could you give us your name and address?
Oh, yeah. I beg your pardon. Yeah. Sam Bishop, 10893 Lake Run Road.
And the other gentleman as well.
Yeah. Mike West, 10914 Tahoe Way.
I'm Daniel Bird. I'm a resident of Lehigh, but I work in town here, so just a guest tonight.
And your address, please.
In Lehigh, it's 3741 West, 2380 North.
Thank you.
We've reduced both the geographical scope of our group and the length of our name. We are now Bike Walk Sojo and are here this evening to ask the mayor and council to create an active transportation committee. Of our existing committees, I'm picturing something most similar to the Arts Council, where the main focus is on encouraging a public good that we tend to overlook otherwise. I will let Mike explain what that means.
Yeah, so kind of what we are thinking about is taking ideas from what Provo City has done. They have an active transportation committee. They've been there for years. They do things to try and help encourage people to cycle, walk, and get around in Beans without having to drive a car necessarily. Some of the things that they've done, for example, are doing events like bike to work or bike to school day, and it could include, you know, bike, walk, roll kind of thing. You can get out and encourage kids to get to school and other means, especially where we can find safe routes to do that. And then the committee can have a planning guide that can help with school administrators as they plan for that as well, so the committee can be involved with doing that. Also, May is Bike Month, so there's a couple different types of events you can do for Bike Month, which would include like doing a bike-in instead of like a drive-in movie theater. You could set up like a screen, you know, those fun blow-up type screens, and get the kids and anybody in the community who wanted to come and bike, walk, anything to come to that type of event. You could do a stroll or roll along like the Jordan River Parkway. Provo does that along the Provo River Parkway, so we have some options for that, and a bike-to-work type of day. And we could hold similar events in May and even other parts of the year. So that's a lot of what an active transportation committee could do. We could also take the lead in applying for a bicycle-friendly community award, which is what Sam has just passed out to you there. So the American League of Bicyclists has an application that you could submit with a $50 fee. The committee could work on submitting that application. And the award levels go from bronze all the way up to platinum. They provide feedback to the city on what's going well, but also ways the city can improve to help with their cycling specifically. We want to look holistically at active transportation, but they can give us some great advice on that. And then the award designations are good for 4 years. And what you have in front of you is a report card that they had done for Draper. So there's also one other organization we could look at called America Walks, and they have a similar program with a rating such as that. So. About out of time, but I know that sometimes it's been challenging to staff committees like the Arts Council, and that some of what we are proposing would take a good number of volunteers. So Mr. Lewis has talked a number of times about how members of the Ham Radio Club coordinate with city staff and help. We propose a similar relationship between the Active Transportation Committee and Bike Walk Sojo or whatever organization like it. So yeah. That's it. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
For sharing.
Good evening. My name is Gary Garner. I'm at 1868 South or West Lawrence Circle, South Jordan. I wanted to bring up this latest Making the City Great is by the city manager. Frankly, it left me a little cold, and I gave it to my wife, and it left her a little cold, too. There's a lot of rhetoric in here about making the city great, and it's maybe that's the job of the city manager to take a 35,000-foot overview of what the city is, but I found this lacking specifics. He starts out here saying that the environment is one of the main things that's on the South Jordan city minds. I looked at some surveys from the Daily Herald and from the Dan Jones and Associates, and the environment wasn't mentioned once. Those are good things that citizens are worried about is growth, housing costs. On my street, probably half of the houses have basement apartments in them now because people can't afford to buy a whole house. They have to either share it to make the payments or make room for their kids and other people. Education, crime, jobs, tax reform, water, quality of growth, and inflation are kind of the main things that people are worried about. In a Dan Jones survey, they looked at 10 areas and none of them mentioned anything about environment. What I'd like to say is, a leader once told me is the main thing is to keep the main thing the main thing. And I'm thinking that maybe you're missing the mark a little bit. Another thing that gave me pause here is this planning, strategic planning. Now, I haven't seen that document, but back in the 80s, I spent 10 years on the Planning and Zoning Commission. And I remember the sweat and tears that we went over to develop a city master plan and building plans and other kinds of plans. And then it was held, it went before the city council and the public. He's talking about a strategic plan that could easily be changed to meet the needs of the community. I think that's a little too loose and lets people kind of maybe be dictators or make the plan whatever they feel like it is. You talk about your budget here, and I haven't been able to review the budget, but to me, I think if the city council would take a position that we aren't going to allow growth in the budget. I know I paid a little more tax this year to South Jordan City. Zero growth budget would make my heart feel better. He talks about being lean and mean, and I agree with that the city ought to do that. But I don't see any freezes in hiring. I looked at the city hiring. There's four or five positions out there for hiring. So my time's up, but I think this maybe next time we do one of these, it ought to be come down with more specifics and some things we can sink our teeth into. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Janeline Sainsbury. I live at 10638 South, 1055 West, directly straight across from the development, the Rise development. I just wanted to ask a couple of questions. I have written a couple of letters over the last few months and addressed to all of the city council members, and I haven't got any response at all, so I'm not sure if you've received them or not. And one of them was regarding the historic road, and I got up in December and talked about that. And I think some of you may have said that you received that. And I know that that's all said and done. But the last one that I wrote was just a couple of weeks ago. And it was regarding the one-way road proposal that Mr. Reese was talking about before. And I'm just wondering if you have received that. And specifically, I'd like to know why the one-way road into the development is not being considered. I do not accept the reason given by the city manager that it will be too confusing to the residents or that it can't be enforced. As with any new road, residents will learn the entrance and exits quickly. This is very concerning to us. I know I speak for a lot of the residents as a lot of us feel that decisions with high density and roads are made and before city council meetings, and city council meetings are just a formality. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Mike Lawrence. Last name is spelled L-O-R-E-N-C, for whoever's writing that down. I live at 5029 Rosewood Drive here in South Jordan. My concern is, I was on the Utah Water Savers website and then plugged in my address to see what I was eligible for in terms of water conservation money, because I saw a lot of money flowing in from the state. And South Jordan seems to be the only city that does not allow us access to the state funds, to the new state funds, which I can't really seem to understand why. We've got, when I plug in a address my size but call it West Jordan, I'm eligible for something like $4,000. Where here in South Jordan, I might be eligible for $1,000 or $1,300 worth of the stuff that you guys are providing. So it does seem like it just needs to be a decision to let us do it, because the money is coming in from the state and the program is being managed by the water district. So you guys really don't have to do anything, just allow it. So I'd kind of like to see some reconsideration on allowing us access to the new state money for water conservation in our landscapes. So that's it. Thank you.
Dustin or Gary, can you comment on that?
If it's okay, I could. So we get grant funding from Jordan Valley, and we administer our own program because we feel like it's more effective and we're able to do more with it. So as far as the level of funding and all the numbers I've seen, we actually provide more to residents than the Utah Water Savers website does. And so there's a lot more I could share, but we get a lot more bang for the buck doing our own program, and we get more participation through how we spend our money. And our funds do come from Jordan Valley, and we'll be receiving some additional funds based on funds that are being allocated to Salt Lake County for water conservation. So the bottom line is we feel like we're spending our money more effectively, and we're reaching more people by having our own program versus going with the state program. And our website is watersmartsojo.org, and our water conservation coordinator is Connor Oswald, and he can walk through the dollar amounts and all the programs that we have to offer.
Thank you.
Just to clarify, there's going to be public comment.
Could you step up to the microphone?
Yep. As long as you don't count my 3 minutes against me. Go ahead. I was just making sure that we're still going to have public comment on H1 and H2 later. Okay, because there's been some crossover, so
yes.
I just want to make sure. Okay.
My name is Karen Christensen. My family residence here is here in South Jordan, 10677 South, 1055 West. It's directly south of this concept plan from the Rise development. I came to the meeting on the 17th when we were to be allowed time to address some of these issues, and I stayed about 4 hours, and then I get up at 4 in the morning the next day, and I just had to leave, so I couldn't. Just got tidbits from everybody else. Our main concern, we are the neighbors right next to that development. My mom's property just will be shadowed by all of this many, many, many units of rentals. I know that I've talked to the city a little bit, and I know that you've had someone talk about your road systems and saying that there's plenty of access for this kind of development to have road access in and out. And they're telling me that they think that 70% of the road will go down, not on 1055 West. But I've been studying this since that meeting, and I cannot imagine. And I've been down on that lower level where the buildings are, office buildings and stuff. That is such a crowded area. If I were a parent, I would never take that road. I know that in the summertime they have soccer, sports down there, and that is a nightmare. I just do not believe that this plan is going to be conducive to having the traffic not be a nightmare and really will hinder this 1055 West. I don't know how that's going to handle it. And then we're going to have developments later, you know, down the road eventually, too. And this is really a very big concern. Another concern I have is our family property has about a 10-foot, if not more, drop from where that is. And I know they're going to be covering the ditches and all of those kinds of things. I'm very much concerned about whether we're going to have any retaining walls that are going to protect us from having the slide and the runoff into our property because it slopes so far down. And I've talked to a few of the development people, but I don't get any answers from them how they're going to handle that. They tell me they're going to have a wall, but I can't imagine a fence wall can contain what might happen with the runoff of water right next to our family property. So those are just some of our concerns. Thank you.
You don't need to look at them before I talk, but I'll just go over them quickly. My name's Charles Judd. My residence, 1122 Country Creek Drive. My grandchildren live on 1055 West, and I'm concerned about the road system that is there. I have a master's degree from the University of Utah in traffic engineering, and I have tried to find out what is going on to be comfortable with what the city is proposing. I've looked at a number of drawings and information and cannot find enough information to feel comfortable about what is being proposed, specifically about the intersection that is proposed out onto 1055 West. I am concerned that if this was approved at this point with the information that you have, that you'll be giving the engineers in your department actually an impossible task. I know that it seems to be that what we want to do is move this forward and then have the engineers figure this out, how it can be done safely and properly. And having been in that position before, I would not want to be handed this intersection and say, try and make it work and make all these things go. I have listed here in a simple form, this was simply an outline of things that should be considered when you do a simple intersection. And I've highlighted for you some of the concerns that you should look at. And there's a lot of them in there. I don't have time to go through them all. But there is one major concern that is clear that you cannot build an you should not build an intersection there straight out. If you look down under number four, this is alignment and profile. And in there, in the yellow, it says grades in excess of 3% should therefore be avoided. Or on intersections, while those in excess of 6% should not be allowed. I went out there today with my surveying equipment and looked at the slope. The slope, I don't even know for sure where you're going to put the intersection, but if you put it to the north, you're going to run into problems with right away in the house that's right there. If you move anywhere on there, the slope is greater than 6%. And that is something that is not even supposed to be allowed. And I can see a big problem. If you move forward here, say, go do it, then I can see the city either getting a huge bill to somehow level that whole hill out so that it's less than 6%. And even that's not really a good idea. But you might get hooked with a lot of money to try and put in a proper intersection. I haven't seen things about how fire trucks are supposed to get around that corner. Right away, the view to get around trees and other things, it's not there. Crosswalks are going to be built where they can't be seen. That's my biggest concern, is my grandkids are on there. And an intersection on a slope like that, you're going to have cars flying over that hill, and then all of a sudden there's going to be a crosswalk. There's just a lot of things that as an engineer I would not want to see here. I am planning to maybe do a grandma request to see if there's information that I haven't seen, because everything I've looked at, I just can't see the answers to so many questions. So thank you for your time.
Thank you.
My name is Resh Jeffries. I live at 10963 South, 1055 West, and I don't want to say a lot. I'll just kind of echo some of the things that they've said about the intersection there and the issues as far as there being that not being a one-way road. I hadn't heard the initial reporting that it was until Mrs. Sainsbury indicated that there was a report that it was too confusing for it to be a one-way road. I hadn't heard that that was the explanation, but I think that should be looked at again, somewhat, almost. I don't know how confusing one-way roads are, but that seems kind of insulting to the future residents of that property. I'm a personal injury attorney by nature, and one thing I did want to underscore is that that's the bus stop location for our kids that we drop off in the morning, just right there off of 1055 and then the cross street. I think it's 10550. I have four kids of my own that I drop off there in the morning. There are cars that sort of line the edge of that road that wait in the winter hours for the buses to come. I think that's maybe something that hasn't been considered. I just wanted to echo that that is where we drop off our kids, and if we add another 164 residents, presumably, I don't know, 100 or 200 cars during the morning commute at that intersection, that could present a problem. I think what Mr. Judd indicated, that there would definitely need to be a crosswalk, and the issues with the slope and the grading and stuff of that road coming up to the crosswalk does present, it seems like, an issue. So that's just what I would add to that. Thanks.
Hi, my name is Kate Sainsbury. I'm a resident of 10638 South, 1055 West, and I'm also addressing the traffic flow regarding that intersection. If you are unfamiliar with the sport of pickleball, I understand that was a gift, gifted to the city by the developer, and I don't know if you've tried to play pickleball or know anything about it, but it is very popular among the youth of South Jordan and their families. And if you try to go to any pickleball court in South Jordan or anywhere in any neighboring towns, it is very, very crowded. And having another pickleball court will just bring more traffic flow, which, from what I understand, is not expected through that entrance. But also to go along with that, cemeteries are supposed to be respectful and reverent, and I know that because I've lived next to one my whole life. I would just like to invite you to think about how that would affect those mourning if it is very loud with traffic and lots of traffic causes accidents, as you well know. And so I would just like you to think about that, and thank you for your time.
My name is Scott Sainsbury. I live at 10638 South, 1055 West. You should know me by now. I've been here for the last several months trying to petition some common sense into this situation. And the last place I want to be is at a city council meeting with my daughter before she leaves on her mission in the morning. So the way I look at this situation is you all work for us, the people. We pay your salaries. But I don't feel like our voices are being heard. I've talked to literally hundreds of people in the city of South Jordan, and nobody wants more high density housing in the city of South Jordan. I've lived in Washington. I grew up in Washington State. Seattle's a mess. I've lived in L.A. L.A.'s a bigger mess. And the reason that we moved here is because we don't want to live in high density housing. We picked this specific area of South Jordan because we have the best neighbors, dead ones. We also have a lot of neighbors that have agriculture area, and we know that development's coming. Nobody's against development here, but we would like you to stick with the standard third-acre lots that make a lot of sense. It doesn't make any sense to move from agricultural zoning to high-density zoning, but apparently if you donate a couple of pickleball courts, you can get what you want with this council. My biggest concern is I've worked in the river bottom for a while, and I know that at 5 o'clock when everybody's getting off work, as soon as they figure out there is another exit out of there, I think one of the city planners or somebody said that they estimated about 5% of that river bottom traffic will be coming up through there if it's a two-way street. You're wrong. It's going to be closer to 15%. I know there's a couple of different exits, but there will be more people coming up there than you think. The other big concern is, I sat and watched this council and everybody was shaking their head. No, we haven't made any decisions. We're all trying to figure that out. But it sounds like you've known from the very get-go exactly what you're going to do. And then one of my good neighbors came up with a brilliant idea, a win-win compromise. And we've got basically every signature on our street recommending that we go with a one-way street. This is a happy medium. It allows first responders to get into the neighborhood immediately without any restrictions, but it will curb our biggest concern of too much westbound traffic out of that neighborhood, because people aren't going to exit from the east. They're going to exit from the west because that's where they're going to go grocery shopping. That's where they're going to be dropping their kids off at schools. The only reason you exit to the east is if you're going up to Salt Lake City or you're going down to Utah County, or you're going east of the freeway, and that is the minority of the time that people are coming out of that area. I just would like you to highly consider the logic and the sensibility of having a one-way street heading eastbound into that neighborhood. I think it makes a lot of sense. And as my daughter politely said, with respect to the kindred dead of previous mayors of this city and their families, let's give the cemetery the peace and the respect that our dead deserve. And that's going to go away if we make it a two-way street. Thank you.
Is there anyone else who would like to comment during the public comment portion? Seeing none, is there anyone online that would like to comment? And I see a couple hands up. So if we could, we'll go to Benny and Gardner, if you can turn your camera on. And the time is now yours to address the council. And, okay.
Good evening, everybody. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. I'm Benyon Gardner. I live at 4922 West Fishhook Road in South Jordan. I'm here virtually along with the Bike Walk Sojo group, following Sam's lead. Sam's been great to organize and give some of us residents who want to see safer streets here in South Jordan some means to kind of organize and work on that. I wanted to thank also my council member, Jason McGuire, for his support and kind of interacting with us as well and supporting that. And also council member Shelton, who's responded to some issues that I've let him know in the past and has worked to improve some of the trail access along Bingham Creek. So thank you all very much. I just wanted to kind of echo what Sam and the rest of us has spoken about. And part of the reason I moved to South Jordan and to Daybreak was because it's marketed as a very walkable and safe place to be on foot or on bike. And it is, and I think that's great. We should embrace that. And I think we can do even better across the city to improve access for active transit. So active transportation. I think even for people who are primarily get around by car, I promise you there are people in front of you when you're stuck in traffic that if there was a safe option to get around on a bike or on foot or some other way, that they would be out of your way and on a bike instead. I know that's my case a lot of times, but it's kind of a scary prospect in a lot of places to get around on a bike. And so you have a lot of residents here who have some energy and enthusiasm and want to help improve the city. We're just looking for an outlet or a way to do that. One option I was going to mention, I'm sure you're all aware of and watching, but the model that Harriman has been implementing with the Friends of Harriman program, where they are using a nonprofit separate from the city, which gives them some flexibility and allows them to access some funding and grants that might not be available to the city. That might be something to look at as well. I actually have volunteered and am on the subcommittee for Friends of Harriman for their trails committee because I use those trails on a regular basis for recreation. And so they're open and taking all the input and help they can get. And I think South Jordan would be wise to follow suit and give residents an option to be more involved and help improve our city. So that's my comment for you. Thank you.
Thank you. Bronson, I see your hand up as well. If you would turn on your microphone, and time is now yours.
Yeah, thanks a lot. I'm going to try to be really brief. This is kind of my first time. My name is Bronson Mullen. My address is 11113 South Holly Springs Drive. And I guess I just want to say nice job, everybody, on 1055 West that I didn't know about. Hopefully it doesn't take that much effort to get my concerns considered, but I hope that everybody is listening and that gets taken into account. I just wanted to get some direction on how to proceed with getting proper safety measures in place at Aspen Elementary School for the children walking to school. We've been in contact with the principal and the police department that's responsible for the crosswalks and the crossing guards in the area. Unfortunately, we're feeling like we're getting a bit of misinformation. We're getting the runaround from the police and we're facing some excuses first mentality. And I just want to figure out some solutions. The school's been open for almost 2 years. And for all that time, we've been trying to improve the safety at the crosswalks. One of them in particular has a lot of traffic in the morning and the afternoon, and it has several dozen students that cross. The police have told us that the numbers of people crossing do indeed merit a crossing guard. However, we haven't been able to get that to happen. We haven't even been able to get a crosswalk painted, which is really frustrating. There's not a single school zone sign anywhere around the entire school. There's four intersections, let alone any flashing lights that say 20 miles an hour or anything like that. There's not even a sign that says that it's a school zone or 20 miles an hour. And after having extensive conversations with the police department and the principal, we were originally told that the issue was that there wasn't crossing guard availability. So we worked to resolve that. And now that's resolved. And now the latest reason is that there's a lack of funding. And I just want to know what steps, if I could just get some direction, how do we get, first of all, proper signage? How do we get a crosswalk even painted as a start? And then where do I go to get, you know, funding for additional crossing guard, all of the places that have the traffic that merit a crossing guard? Can you help me tell me what to do?
Okay. So we can just direct city, Gary, couldn't you direct someone, city staff, to reach out to Mr. Bronson to answer his questions that he has? Contact Gary. Okay. All right. So if you can contact our city manager, Gary Watcott, and he can help you through your questions.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. All right. Go ahead.
Hello, my name is Carmen Ruffner. I live on 10623 South, 1055 West. And I'm here to talk about the street that is being discussed on the new building development that's coming. I, along with other of my neighbors, have signed the petition to, ask for a one-way street versus a two-way street. I actually would be... My house faces that other side of the road, so for me it's a big impact because I would have cars coming and going and me coming out directly from that my driveway into the street when cars are coming in and out. For me, that's a safety. I mean, I do pay attention, but still, my children playing on their bikes, it's like any community, obviously, they would have to pay attention. But I think a one-way street going into the community versus coming out would have less impact. I know it's a smaller width, and I think it would be a little more doable. I just think that the impact to our community and right there in front of my house, it's pretty big for the people that live there and they walk every day. And we know that we have to adjust to new and modern things that have to happen in our community. But I wish that you would hear that option and have it open to the developers here present, if there's any. It would be nice that they would take that into account. Thank you.
Is there anyone else that would like to address the council? Is there anyone online that would still like to address the council? If so, raise your hand or turn on your camera. Okay, seeing none, I'll close the public comment. There's a couple of items I think we just need to address here. And one is if we could just direct staff to get in touch with Sam, you know, pertaining to his request, you know, with the committee. So thank you for addressing us here as well. And the other one is Gary, I'm gonna ask you to comment here, you know, just on the road. I know some members, you know, of our city have talked to you. And I just, if people have, you know, questions, you know, or comments or recommendations, could you give some recommendations on the best way to be able to, you know, reach out to you or to, you know, talk with our engineers?
Yeah, in fact, Jeremy Nelson is right here. If you want to raise your hand, Jeremy's our traffic engineer in the city. Our city engineer, Brad Clavino, is not here, who was in the meeting when the residents met with I and so with Stephen. We did talk about the one-way street. There was some concern with the city engineer, myself, making sure that we made a street that worked right, and that it there are other roads inside of that subdivision, and they are affected if there are as one street being one way. And we just want to make sure we don't create more liability for us as well as by signing the street in an improper way that may not work right, or create more traffic issues that might be more safety-oriented for drivers. So I think there are still more remedies to refine. The way the council left that direction was for us to look for some solutions. I don't think we've, you know, have all those answers yet, but certainly looking at them. And anybody in the audience is always welcome to call the city and talk to me or any of the engineering team, Jeremy or Brad specifically would know about this project. Stephen Schaefermeyer is our planning director and has been involved in the project as well. I'll have knowledge about the project.
Good. Did you have any comments, Stephen? Well,
I'll just give an update. There always seems to be some confusion about what was approved, what wasn't, what next steps are. So I'll just clarify that the developer has submitted what's called a preliminary plat. That is the document that once recorded at the county recorder's office will actually subdivide the property so that they can start building. That is the preliminary plat goes to the planning commission in a public hearing. And it's at that time when staff has had a chance to review their plans. What was presented before was a concept. Now they're getting into things like grading and getting very specific about what the property will look like. And there will be notices sent out for that meeting. I don't have a date yet for that meeting because there are still corrections that need to be made by the developer, comments that need to be addressed from staff. And of course, as part of that review, the street is part of that review. So that's just an update of where we are on the process. Once that preliminary plat is approved by the Planning Commission, and they have to approve it if it complies with our ordinances, then they record a final plat and then move forward with building permits. And so that's where we are right now in the process.
Council, is there anything else that you feel need to be addressed from the public comments?
Could we ask our police chief to comment on the crosswalk by Aspen Elementary? Would that be all right?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what the specific concerns are. I was just trying to text our lieutenant over that area to see what kind of conversations have already taken place, but we'll certainly look at that. As you know, we're responsible for the city is responsible for the crossing guards. There's a process that we go through to determine whether a crossing meets that threshold. It sounds like maybe he's received information that it does meet that threshold. So we would typically look at those things. We try not to fund them mid-year, but if we look at it, we would try to do that if that need arises. And so let me just, I'll do some follow-up with the lieutenant and find out what's been done there. And they do the safe walking routes usually once a year ahead of the school year to determine where they want those routes to be. And we're part of that process with the school. And so we'll look into it.
So, and is it okay if Mr. Bronson reaches out to you?
Absolutely. Okay. Sure.
So, Mr. Bronson, if you're online, if you heard that, please reach out to, you know, Police Chief Jeff Carr, and he can help you.
Mayor Pro Tem, if I could.
Yes.
In addition to the crossing guard, I'd like to know if the city would look into that crosswalk not being painted, kind of the status of why that's the case.
Yeah, and I don't know who does that, if that's Jason's area or...
Yeah, I'll check into
Jeremy's.
That. Yeah.
Perfect. Thank you so
much. I know the signs were put up as of 6 months ago because I checked them, but I'll... They were up, yes, but I haven't driven out there in a bit, so I'll confirm they've made it through the winter.
Okay. I would love to hear follow-up on that. Thank you both. Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem.
Yep. Is there anything else that needs to be addressed from the public comments, Council? Okay. I would like to, you know, just
understand more about the one-way road. Today is not, you know, during our public comments, it's not the time for us to add an agenda item. Mr. Watcott, if you could maybe just work and just kind of provide just a little bit more information to the council so we can understand, you know, the one-way road issues and concerns.
Sure.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, we will now move on to item G, G1, resolution R-2023-09, authorizing the mayor to enter into an interlocal cooperation agreement with Salt Lake County for 2022-2028 UPDES media campaign cost sharing. And we'll turn our time over to our Director of Public Works, Jason Rasmussen.
Thank you, Mr. Harris. This is our interlocal agreement. We've actually had the same one before, and it's expired. So this is between the city and Salt Lake County. We have a permit. All the cities within Salt Lake County and Salt Lake County itself share a joint municipal stormwater permit that allows us to discharge stormwater into tributaries of the Jordan River and the Jordan River. There's a number of requirements in that permit, one of which is providing public education into stormwater quality and what residents and businesses can do to and how they can affect stormwater quality before it goes into these bodies of water. So you may have heard of this different messaging. We all live downstream. It's on commercials. It's on printed material. They advertise in movie theaters before the movie starts. And it's broadcast in many areas. And again, this is a requirement of the state to provide public education to help educate us all on how we can impact the quality of stormwater before it goes into these natural bodies. So this agreement allows us to participate with the Stormwater Coalition, which is all the cities within Salt Lake County and Salt Lake County itself, to do a cost share in for this media campaign. And it's a very cost-effective way to fulfill this stormwater permit requirement to come together and do it together versus having 15 different messages coming from 15 different entities on stormwater. And there's a website, stormwatercoalition.org, where there's resources as well. These are some of the things that get published by the Stormwater Coalition as far as public education. This is the website, and it's a website for businesses, residents, students, and teachers to learn more about stormwater quality. So going back to the previous slide, the contribution we would be required to commit is a little over $11,000, and this works out to be about 15 cents per resident in our city. That's how we're charged that. The cost of this has been calculated into our stormwater rate, so it's not funding we're looking to find. It's been budgeted into our budget over the last few years as we've been a contributing member to the Stormwater Coalition of Salt Lake County. Lastly, I'm just going to show this video. You may have seen it. This is an example of some of the media that the Stormwater Coalition puts out. You may have remembered seeing this from years ago.
Everything that goes down our storm drains ends up in our lakes and rivers. Everything.
That's an example of some of the media that this coalition puts out. And again, it's a very cost-effective way for the city to participate in this public education requirement of our stormwater permit. And staff is recommending that this resolution is approved so that we can sign this agreement with Salt Lake County. And happy to take any questions if there are any. Okay, thank you.
There's no questions or comments. I'll entertain a motion.
Mayor Pro Tem, I'll make a motion that we approve resolution R-2023-09.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second that.
All right. Since this involves money, I'll ask for a roll call vote, please.
Councilmember McGuire?
Yes.
Councilmember Zander?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Harris?
Yes.
Councilmember Marler?
Yes.
And Councilmember Shelton?
Yes.
All right, it is approved unanimously. Thank you. All right, we'll now move on to item H1, Resolution R-2023-08, amending the future land use map of the general plan of the City of South Jordan from economic infill opportunity to stable neighborhood on the property located at 10827 South, 1055 West. The applicant is Devin Hatch, and we'll turn the time over to Stephen Schaefer.
Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem. Before you is an application by the property owners to rezone a part of their property, and it probably makes the most sense. To show you here, they've got some properties both on the east side of 1055 West and on the west side of 1055 West. This is the future land use for these properties. The ones on the east side, that was a mistake from our consultant. When we did our general plan, they were supposed to follow parcel lines, and this was just one that crossed that canal. That land use was not supposed to cross that canal. And so one of the parts of this application is to fix that land use. And we missed it in our review as well. So this is an opportunity to fix that land use. And with that land use, then, the proposal is to rezone all properties as R1.8. As you can see on the map here, the light green is R1.8. There's quite a bit of it in the area. The yellow that's adjacent to some of their properties is R2.5, which is a more dense zone for this area. The property owners own both all the properties in red, but they also own properties that are currently zoned R1.8. So those three parcels on the west side of 1055 West are already zoned R1.8. So they could have come in without this rezone and developed those under the zone. Their proposal is to bring their other properties, which they've recently acquired, to conform with both the land use in the area and with the properties that they already own and that are zoned that. This is simply a concept plan. Unlike other projects that come before you, this is a street rezone. There's no concept plan that is attached to a development agreement that makes it binding. However, our ordinance does require that the developer provide a concept of how they plan to develop the parcel. So this is just obviously for the west side for those parcels. The east side would become two parcels. But the west side would become six if they received approval here. Currently, again, the property that's already zoned R1.8 are these lots. Roughly speaking, that's not a clear line there. And then the properties that are not currently zoned R1.8 are the ones that I haven't circled. R1.8 on this amount of acreage would allow about seven lots. They're proposing six. Each of those lots, again, not binding, but this is their concept at this point. You'll hear some comments tonight, and obviously neighbors are concerned about the change that is happening in this area. And so you'll hear some concerns about the concept plan. As I explained in the public comment, there will be a subsequent subdivision when if in fact you decide to rezone the property, there would be a subsequent subdivision hearing with the Planning Commission. So this is the proposal before you tonight, and staff recommends approval of both the resolution, which changes the land use on the properties on the east side of 1055 West, as well as the rezone ordinance, which would change, bring the remainder of their property into conformance with the R1.8 zone.
Right. Is the applicant, Devin Hatcher, do you wish to address the council?
Good evening. My name is Devin Hatch. I am the applicant for this rezone. I personally plan on making my home one of the lots on the top there, so I'm have personal interest in this development. When I first came here, when I saw it, I loved the feel of the neighborhood. That's kind of the idea of where I'm going with this. I wanted to keep kind of that same feel. This is the reason why I chose to go with the bigger lots to fit the neighborhood. I'm excited about keeping it a nice place and going along with what I fell in love with when I drove down there. So we're excited about that. I want to thank the staff, the Planning Commission, their professionalism, working with me on it. They've been great. Obviously, with change, I know it doesn't always come welcome, and with the residents around there, I'd just like to say that we're excited to work with them if they want to reach out to us. We're trying to make good neighbors there, and I plan on living there, so I'd love to have conversations if they have concerns or whatever and work through it. I really would like to make it a beautiful community, not go high density and things like that. I could have gone that route, but to where I'm going to live there, I'm excited to try and keep it a nice area. So that's all I'd like to add. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll now open the public hearing. So if anyone would like to address the council, the time is now yours.
Travis Hyatt. I'm at 10855 South Country Creek Drive. Quick question. Logistically, we sent those images via email today. Are we able to put those on the screens? Or is that not something you can do this quickly?
Yes. Yeah, IT received them, and so they'll put them up for you. They combined both of your presentations into one.
Okay. Oh, excellent. Okay. Great. That's sweet. Okay. First thing I want to bring up, I've got a couple issues. The first one's water. It was mentioned a couple weeks ago, there are concerns about the water. There's 14 homes that access the irrigation line that is being turned into a driveway, basically, according to this proposal. And you can see images one and two. Yeah, there's where the ear, that's just part of it. It actually runs to the north quite a ways and down. No one has brought forward a workable proposal to address the irrigation water. The proposed driveway is directly over the irrigation line. And what they're actually saying is that there's going to be a problem. They admit that there's going to be a problem, but no one's really said how we're going to mitigate it. So that's concerning for everybody, especially those 14 water users. Known and expected problems should be avoided at the very least, given workable, reasonable solutions, which there have been none. And then from South Jordan Commission meeting notes dated November 8th regarding the Rise townhomes also being built on 1055 West, Deputy City Engineer Nielsen said they have a legal responsibility to ensure the water goes where it has historically gone. No part of this plan is going to make that happen. So we're obviously concerned about that. The existing water table also changes as will run off and flow that water into existing homes. The tree line that was abruptly removed, we can pull those images up. That's the before. There's a before. There's the after. And actually, those trees to the right of that white building are gone now, too. So the existing water table will change. That tree line is going to disrupt that. And there was also some springs underneath those trees that will be disrupted. The Rise Develop is adding 155 townhomes, which we spoke about earlier. We've heard several comments about that. We had the same concerns about the increased traffic, and I think that was pretty well spoken to this evening. We spoke a couple weeks ago specifically to the negative impact of property value. And legal counsel, I don't think he's here tonight, but basically told us there was no substantiation. It was a little bit patronizing, to be honest, because, and I'll go back to these images. When we bought the house, that's what our view was. We had trees and we had the mountains. Now we've got that. It's almost impossible to imagine that that's the same backyard. So I think we do have substantiation, and we've been talking to some appraisers. I'm running out of time, but they've actually, we weren't able to get an appraisal put together this short amount of time. We will be doing that and bringing that to the council for the next meeting. We believe that there is, that we do have substantiation for property loss value. Appreciate your time. We're pretty passionate about this, and I'll turn the time over to my wife. She's got a few more things to say.
My name is Melanie Hyatt. I live at 10855 South Country Creek Drive in South Jordan. I want to note that on our public notice we received, I sent the email several times and it bounced, and the phone number is no longer in service. I did get someone nice to help me get that sorted out, but thought you should know that on the letter going out, it's not working. Gary is popular tonight. In his South Jordan newsletter, he said, most cities in Utah have to cope with rapid growth and urbanization on an unprecedented scale. These challenges, or dealing with the fallout of haphazard growth and planning, is the engagement of residents. Our elected officials want everyone engaged. We want to listen to neighborhoods. The story of change is about the engagement of residents. Awesome. Here we are, the residents, and the herd that just left are all here for the same reason as well. We are against the developer who's requesting an ag area of zoning be zoned to residential. This provided plan is extremely unusual, does not integrate environmental thinking, is not cost efficient, does not make our lives better. The growth is unprecedented, hazardous, and unwanted. We were patronized by the Zoning Commission that losing a tree is difficult and that change is hard. However, we were not talking about a tree. We were talking about a tree line that was home to a family of red-tailed hawks and owls and other animals. It was, in fact, a small forest, hundreds of years old, that was literally bulldozed down. See images 3-7. It will have a detrimental impact on the neighborhood. Lots have been said about this one-lane road with no curb or gutter. My images 8-10 show where this development is actually happening, where it is one-lane road. That's the road with my vehicle on it. There are no plans to improve the road conditions to manage the more than doubling of traffic to impact that neighborhood. The proposed driveway is our biggest concern, and the cul-de-sac of this development will run through numerous backyards. They're literally proposing a roadway be added to tree-lined farmland and pasture. Cars will now be driving through our backyards at approximately a 10 to 20% incline, so that headlights will be shining into our houses. The required angle of the proposed driveway would make their suggested fence line completely useless in blocking traffic and light pollution to the existing neighbors. Just because Utah is experiencing, at the zoning meeting, and he said it again this evening, the developers claim to want to be team players and good neighbors who want to work with the neighborhood and who just want to be peaceful, coexist, yada, yada. Yet, there has been zero communication with the existing neighbors. Not one call, not one letter, not one email, not one knock on the door. This is not a developer wanting anything that's best for the neighborhood when 98% of us are saying we don't want this. They're only interested in what's best for their pocketbook. So after zero communication from these peaceful developers, they brought in bulldozers and took out a 100-year-old tree line and 8 fresh water springs. Their actions are speaking loud and clear. If I may, I have a little sum up. Can I
give
you? Thank you. Just because Utah is experiencing unprecedented growth does not mean that we should be. Maybe some ag zoning should be left for the neighborhoods and residents of South Jordan that want it there. Maybe every remaining scrap of grass should not be turned into townhomes or luxury homes or density housing. And maybe we like Cemetery Road the way that it is, quiet, one lane, unobstructed, and undeveloped. Not having solutions for irrigation, not having solutions for roads and traffic, not having solutions for current existing neighbors and homeowners' loss of property is simply unacceptable. Thanks.
I have a reading from another neighbor. He wasn't able to be here tonight because he had a family emergency. It's a one-page reading.
If you could give his name at the microphone. Speak into the microphone, please.
Okay, this is a reading from Kenyon Clark. He lives at 1080 Rivercrest Circle, South Jordan, dated February 7th, 2023. It says, to South Jordan City Council, we want you to be aware while they're considering whether or not to rezone the property located at 10828 South, 1055 West, that flowing springs have been located in the vicinity of that property in the past, and that water drainage therefore may be an important issue when this property is later developed. Our property is located immediately south of the subject property. We have not had any flooding or other water problems at our home or property since we moved there 28 years ago. We want to be certain that future development does not impact us negatively. We appreciate your sincere consideration in this matter. Thank you, Kenyon and Marcia Clark at the above address. Thanks again.
And could you give a copy of that letter to our city reporter, please? Yeah.
Charles Judd, 1122 Country Creek Drive. I just had a quick question. On the drawing that was up before, it shows that the coming down 1055, there's now a cul-de-sac in the middle of the road and then a cul-de-sac up. I'm wondering if the plan is to end the road there, because it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense to end the road there. But the drawing shows curb and gutter and sidewalk and everything there, and I do know that we need to consider other people that live down that road, just something that needs to be considered. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
Would anyone else like to address the council? Okay. We'll go online. Is there anyone online that would like to address the council? If so, please turn on your camera or raise your hand. Seeing none, I will close this public hearing. Council, I'll turn the time over to you for any questions that you have.
Mayor Pro Tem, I have a question.
Okay, Council Member Zander.
The gentleman that just came up brought the concern that I had, or clarification. Mr. Schaefermeyer, could you clarify the map that showed the two cul-de-sacs? I've got my Google Maps open, and I think I can see where the Hyatt family home is and the tree line that's been removed. Is there a way we could overlay? Do we have anything that overlays how this development sits and where that cul-de-sac would fall? I can see that the cul-de-sac on the left is on inside of his property, but the cul-de-sac that goes at the end of 1055, where would that land on the city map? Is that?
Councilman Zander, I can attempt to answer your question.
Okay, thank you.
It's kind of hard to hear you.
Can't hear you.
Oh, you want to step up to the microphone here?
Absolutely.
Thank you, Mr. Nielsen. Okay, maybe that's the best.
Yeah. I'm sorry. It's moving all over the place.
Okay.
So the reason for the two cul-de-sacs is... The road to the south is private property. And so by doing the two cul-de-sacs, it'll provide a good turnaround for the snow plows and other, you know, city services, garbage trucks, things that go down 1055 west.
Okay, thank you. And then follow-up question to that, if I may, Mayor Pro Tem.
Yeah, please.
I drove down this road a couple weeks ago, the last time that we discussed this 1055 decisions. Mm-hmm. And I could see where it became private lane, but as I proceeded to the very end of 1055, don't they exit back up that same road? There's no outlet. Am I right?
No, not that I'm aware of. There's no outlet on the south end, right? On the very far south end.
Right.
Yeah, it's a dead end, and that's been a problem for the snowplow drivers. They've actually had to turn around on private property that has caused some problems.
So because it's a private lane, our city snowplows do not proceed down the private lane. Is that right?
Well, and yeah.
They have to go partly down so that they can turn around. There is an area and just a little bit further south where we turn around, but it's not ideal. We've had some incidents there with plow trucks hitting things.
Okay, so then with this proposal, if you could go back to that slide that had the circle, or throw within that circle again, where we, that one? Well, the overlay. You kind of circled on the map. If you could do that again.
Yeah, it's gone now.
Oh,
okay.
Sorry.
Mr. Schaefermeyer, can you do a cute circle again?
Sorry, Steve.
Which one? Forward one. There we go. Okay.
Right there, you had a circle.
About right here.
Okay. So if we do a cul-de-sac there, it would also be a through cul-de-sac. Like, I've never seen that. We'd create a cul-de-sac for the turnaround, but it would still be an artery that goes through.
Right. It's kind of a knuckle more than anything, because then there's a road going to the west there, and then there will be a drive access to the south for that private lane to continue on south.
Okay.
Yeah, so there will be a 90-degree bend in the road, you know, which I'm calling the knuckle, and then you'll go to the west, and then there will be the formal cul-de-sac up at the end, you know, at the top of the hill there.
Okay, perfect. That clarifies much better. Thank you.
No problem.
Thank you, Mayor.
Can I just add one? So the applicant owns the property on the east side, so that cul-de-sac is not a problem because they own that property as well. They're just taking part of their own property to create the cul-de-sac.
That's my understanding. Yeah, they own the two lots on the east side.
Sure, if you understood that or not.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mayor Pro Tem, may I ask a question? Probably for Director Schiffmeyer. So tonight with this rezoning ordinance, and that, we're basically looking at just what the actual rezoning would be. Not dealing with any water issues that would be resolved during, I guess, site planning or?
Yeah, the preliminary plat process. It is hard, right? Because we're changing the land use in preparation for actual physical things changing. And so, you know, we sort of ask you to think about it in more general terms, while also considering the context of the area and what's around it. And then, of course, our ordinance provides that they have to give us a concept plan. Things like water, existing canals, those are always things that, until we get into it with them as staff, that are hard. It's helpful to have that information at this stage. It's hard to provide a lot of answers because they have not... imagine spending all that money to figure out all those solutions and then all of you voting no. So that's one of the challenges that we have, is we can only require them to provide us so much information before we have a determination of whether they can actually proceed. So that's the decision that you're making tonight. But obviously, you know, we now have seen, if not beforehand, some of these pictures and things, and it's always something that is addressed during the subdivision process. Not only is it the actual plat that's recorded with the county, but there's a set of construction drawings that talk about everything from grading to water to existing conditions and how to address them.
Okay, thank you. I just want to bring that up. I'm very sensitive to the heights concern over the water table issue. Place of business where I work, we're built on top of some warm springs, and anytime we've done a construction project, it changes the water flow through our area. Tesoro across the street, they make a change. We suddenly have water issues again. So that's why I was bringing up that concern.
The city attorney can comment on that and give us additional information.
So a quote was made about historic flows of water that I think the sentiment was correct. Maybe the legal conclusion you draw from it is not. So it's not that historic flows have to continue to run where they always ran. It's just that it's the developer or the applicant, as you're considering whether or not to change the land use and zone this. If that's decided and it goes to subdivision, then the applicant then has to deal with historic flows. In other words, the applicant can't come in and say, okay, now you guys upstream have to turn off the water. The applicant has to say, keep your water flowing to me. Now I have to deal with it. So they do that through a number of ways, including piping it, taking it in another direction. They just can't ignore it from the standpoint of making someone else deal with the problem. So if the water flowed down the hill right here, it probably won't later on. It'll have to be dealt with. It's the applicant's job to deal with it, not that you have to keep it in the exact same place. That's not generally 100% what you deal with at rezone. It is a subdivision issue, but all that weighs into your decision of, is this zoning, is this amount of density correct for this area and for the future land use that you're considering tonight?
Thank you.
I have a, just kind of going on the water as well,
I mean, I understand what we're voting on today. I get that. You know, at some point, you know, the applicant's going to have to, you know, do testing of the water flows. Is that right? And to be able to make sure that the water, you know, we're not going to run any water table issues, and then what kind of testing is going to be required?
Yeah, hopefully. Can you guys hear me if I speak into this?
Just hold that closely.
Okay. Okay. Yes, they'll be doing geotechnical studies. They'll be doing borings on the site to understand the water table, you know, what the water table is there, and then develop any mitigation that is needed, you know, based on where that water table is. And that'll be as part of their site plan approval, which happens after the rezone step.
Okay, and do you feel that will address the concerns that were mentioned?
Yes, that's the purpose of the geotechnical study is to look at the water underground, you know, and the soils, you know, those things. So.
And then there were some other concerns just about the irrigation canal, you know, that's going to be somehow covered up or blocked, or you know. Can you address, you know, I know that's going to be looked at too, but, I mean, irrigation water is going to still have to flow to the residents who have these water rights to get that irrigation canal water, correct?
Yes. As part of that site plan, they'll need to work with the ditch master to make sure that whoever had access to that water in the past continues to have access to the water. It may not be through the same means. There may be a turnout, you know, from a pipe instead of a ditch. But yeah, that happens as part of the site plan.
Subdivision.
Yeah.
Okay.
Any other questions?
I have another question. This one's for the developer. It's just wondering if you had considered any other additional layouts to your site, well, your proposed site. You have that road wrapping all the way around, if you've looked into other options.
We've looked at, a couple different other options. The difficulty is that the land has a very steep drop-off and a hill there, so we've tried to come in many different places and ways. This seems to be the only way to get up to those other two lots above and then still meet some of the requirements that the city has for the roads and the sizing there. So we definitely looked at quite a few options, but this seems to be the best way to go. All right. And to address the water concerns, we have looked at and that little ditch there, and most likely we have the means to pipe it and cover it up so that it still flows through. So we'll address that through the proper process. Okay.
That's all for me.
Councilwoman Zander?
I'm looking at this map that you can see here in front of us, and with regard, my microphone, can you hear me now? So with regard to the slope, the Hyatts, or someone spoke to the grade. Could you speak to the point of at the top, so the northwest corner of your property, down to the road, is that the slope, or is it a slope north to south? Can you kind of help us understand that slope and what you plan to do? I know you just talked about a road, but help us just understand the grade.
Yeah, so it is a slope from the west. It slopes down to the east.
To the road.
Road there.
So high to low, okay.
Yes, there is an existing sewer line that runs through the property that we're also working around in that sloped hill. So there's a little, it's a very challenging piece to help. We've definitely had to rack our brain on how to get this one to work. It's been very difficult, but we feel like we've kind of addressed a lot of those sloping challenges and issues and come up with this plan. But that sewer line and then the drop-off and all that is the reason why we had to maneuver that private road around to get it up there. We do plan on lowering that road quite a bit. So I know that there was a concern about lights shining in the back of windows. That road will be low enough to where when we put the fence in, there shouldn't be any light going in the windows of the home at that point. We feel that it will be lower on the road to where it won't even shine over into their yard.
Will you be putting any kind of a retaining wall along your west border?
So, yes, there will be a retaining wall. You can kind of see it on that other plan as it comes into the end of that. Yeah.
Could you?
I don't know how to work this.
Oh, thank you.
See, that solid black line will be a retaining wall right there.
So the lot 1 and 2 will be at a higher elevation than the other four?
Correct.
So the 1 and 2 would be level to the neighbors to the west?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
I do have a question.
Councilmember Shelton?
So the road that circles around coming out of the second circle, or the circle that's in the property there, that will also be a public street, will it?
This is private.
That'll be private.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's more like a driveway.
Yeah. Okay. So we're not talking curb and gutter and all that.
Challenging piece.
Yeah, no, this is all labeled public right-of-way.
I see.
Yeah, that's all.
Okay.
And, you know, comments about the challenges with 1055 West and the improvements, this is generally how roads like this are improved as properties come. They improve the sections of the road that they own property on. So that's what those improvements to 1055 West represent, is they own both sides of it, and so they improve 1055 West as they develop.
So in that follow-up, in that section, in that area of 1055 West, the road will be wider, and it'll have sidewalks, curb and gutter, all that. Okay.
Any other questions from the council?
I don't really have a question for Mr. Schaefermeyer, so I guess my, I don't know. You want to give me comments later, then? You want to make comments later? Or
you're welcome to make a comment right now, Mr. Schaefermeyer.
I don't have a question for Mr. Schaefermeyer, so okay. I think what we're seeing, and what we're seeing on the Rise development, is, you know, change, and it's very difficult to deal with change. In my experience on the council, every subdivision, every change, every road, is hard to deal with, and it's not. Fun to see a whole bunch of trees that you've grown to love, and see them disappear. That's not an enjoyable thing to see, and it's going to happen. It's going to happen throughout that entire corridor, just like we've seen throughout almost all of South Jordan. There's not very much property with large, you know, acreages left. And so I'm not surprised that these are being developed. My heart goes out to the residents that are there, because, you know, they'd just as soon not ever see a change happen. And people have a right to develop a property. And that is going to happen. It's going to happen there. It's going to happen throughout any undeveloped area in our city. And so... Again, my feeling is we kind of have to work together and realize that they have, you know, these individuals do have rights to develop, and those impacts are unfortunate, but they have a right to develop and move forward with their properties, their investments, and so on. And it's our responsibility to make sure that, in fact, it all meets code and ordinance, and that it's going to be safe, and, you know, those kind of things that need to take place from the city standpoint. So
I just wanted to make that comment. Thanks, okay. Mayor Pro Tempore.
Okay. If there are no other questions or comments, I'm ready to entertain a motion.
So we're just doing H1 right now.
Yeah, H1 right now.
Did you? Did he just get here, or
Council D? Would you?
I'm fine with it.
Okay, go ahead.
Maybe explain my public comments.
Mayor Pro Tem.
Yes.
Are you opening up the public hearing, or just for this one individual?
We're going to open just for this one comment here.
I just want to correct. My name is Milo Tenney. I live at 10937 South 1055 West. So I live down at the south end of 1055 West. Want to first to just correct, make what I think is a correction. I understand that that is not all private land beyond that point. I haven't researched it, but when I bought the property, I was told that the city owned the street in front of my house, which is well down that lane. And so I don't know to what extent we're going to get cut off from snowplows and all of that kind of stuff for the rest of that lane. But I don't think it's all private. Wanted to make that comment. And just a comment, you know, you're approving a whole lot of change on 1055 West right now. There's a whole lot of very rapid change going on there. You know, I'd hope you could consider that. We expect change, but it does not have to happen all at once. So just want to make that comment. Thank you.
I wouldn't mind hearing from, I don't know, Mr. Nelson, a yes on this last comment about that lane and where it ends, that type of thing, as far as the public right-of-way and things go.
I'm looking right now. I think there may be pockets of public space along that road. The internet's frozen up, but
south
of that, there may be pockets of public right-of-way, but. That is where a big stretch of private lane starts as well, and so it
from the base of that proposed cul-de-sac
right.
on 1055, you're saying there could be bits and pieces of public right away, but for the most part, it is a private lane. Is that
correct?
What you're saying?
Yeah. The property line right there is private. You know, the public right away ends there, but then. Further on down to the south, there are pockets of the public right-of-way, kind of remnant pieces. But I was trying to pull that up to refresh my memory, but that's the way I remember it.
Yeah, my map is also frozen. If you go onto the, anybody can, oh, well, here we go.
I'm at the Salt Lake County Assessor's website, yeah. And it does become pockets. That yeah. At the south, kind of where this development would end, I think it was the Rodriguez's property, if I'm remembering right.
Yes.
Yeah. There, the first section, that's a private property of the road, and then it opens up to some public right away.
At some point, and I don't know the full history of all of these, but when the Park Place development came in, if you'll recall, there was a piece of part of that. Those are those homes being developed just west of the park out of that cul-de-sac that goes up the hill on Jordan River Drive. There was a lot of discussion about whether or not to connect that road. When that development came in, they vacated, or rather you vacated as the city council, a sliver that had been dedicated to the city because at some point there was a plan to connect 1055 West all the way down through. And so as a lot of these subdivisions west of 1055 West and west of this private drive were developed, the city at the time required them to dedicate portions of their property with the idea that there would be a road going through. I think there was also discussion at some point of there being a trail. Again, I don't know the whole history because it sort of varies subdivision by subdivision, but that's how most likely a lot of those pockets of public property that was dedicated came about.
And one more point on this is, you know, by saying that that's the break to, you know, the private lane, I'm not aware of the city changing any of the services that it's provided, you know, from the past on that lane, you know, especially those public road sections. Maybe they could do a smaller plow truck or something when they get, you know, to that private lane, but it would still be a benefit to have that cul-de-sac there as a turnaround.
Mayor Pro Tem, could I ask a question of clarification? Mr. Schaefermeyer, you spoke about the artery that I'm remembering it was a few years ago. Was it the Jordan River Drive that was the road that we... That broke through from the west to the east?
Is that... Yes, there was an existing stub road that was connected to the new development that then connected it down through the park.
And if I'm looking at the map correctly, 1055 West kind of dead ends just probably, I don't know, 50 yards from Jordan River Parkway, right?
Yeah, there's a there were several lots of that were part of that Park Place subdivision that cut off that access between the dead end there and Jordan River Drive. And then again, just east of there, I suspect, and I'm sure Ryan doesn't like me speculating, but that, again, the parcels to the north along that mostly private drive, again, were required when they were developed to dedicate because there was an idea of connecting all the way through.
So if I see the map correctly, then Jordan River Drive has a home or two like directly at the end of 1055.
Yeah,
so 1055 will never be a through road.
Right, unless we get private property owners to get together, or there's some, you know, purpose in the city condemns, but generally that has not been your practice to condemn for things like that. That one of those, and I'd have to go back and look at the plat, but it looks like that lot that's all the way at the end of 1055 was actually included in the Park Place subdivision, but it accesses from 1055, not any of the Park Place roads.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions? Okay. Would anyone like to make a motion?
I'm ready for a motion, Mayor Brent Pro Tempore. Resolution R2023-08. I'll move that we approve this resolution amending the future land use plan map of the general plan of the city from economic infill opportunity to stable neighborhood.
Okay. We have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Okay. Okay. We have a roll call, please.
Councilmember Marler?
Yes.
Councilmember Shelton?
Yes.
Councilmember Zander?
Yes.
Councilmember McGuire?
Yes.
And Mayor Pro Tem Harris?
Yes. Okay. Resolution is approved unanimously. Okay. Now we'll move on to item H2. Zoning Ordinance 2023-02-Z, rezoning property located at 10828 South, 1055 West, from the A1, A5, and PO zones to the R1.8 zone. Mr. Schaefmeyer, do you have any other comments that you would like to address on this?
No.
Okay.
No, thank you.
Do we need to open this up for a public hearing? Okay. All right. So we will also open this item up to our public hearing. So if anyone would like to address the council, the time is now yours. Okay. We'll turn it to anyone online. If you'd like to address the council, either turn your camera on or please wave your hand. Seeing none, I will close the public hearing. Okay. Does anyone have any questions? Okay. I'm ready to entertain a motion.
Mayor Pro Tem, I'll move to approve Zoning Ordinance 2023-02-Z as stated.
Okay. We have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Okay. We have a second. We get a roll call vote, please.
Councilmember Zander?
Yes.
Councilmember Marler?
Yes.
Councilmember Shelton?
Yes.
Councilmember McGuire?
Yes.
And Mayor Pro Tem Harris?
Yes. Item H2 is approved unanimously. Okay, we will move on to item H3, Ordinance 2023-02, adopting and amended and updated impact fee for water and transportation within the last holdout properties, establishing certain policies related to impact fees for water and transportation facilities, establishing service areas, area, and or other related matters. And we'll turn this time over to our Director of Strategy and Budget, Don Tingey.
Good evening, Council. Tonight, these next two items are kind of similar in nature. The first one deals with the last holdout property, which, as you can see in what you will see in the map here, is like smack dab in the middle of Daybreak. And the other piece is on the west side of Daybreak and just east of the current U-111 alignment. These properties have had infrastructure built to them, transportation and water in particular, that the Daybreak developer has built. And so we needed to go through a proportionality analysis or an impact fee analysis to assess impact fees on these properties. And so it's a little bit different than what we've done for our water and transportation because of the specific locations of the property and how the infrastructure has been built. But we've contracted with Lewis Young, Robertson, and Birmingham, and Fred Philpott has conducted those analysis, and he has a brief presentation to go over those.
Alrighty, thanks for having me this evening. Just as a reminder, as required by Utah code, we have to complete an impact fee facilities plan and an impact fee analysis and go through specific noticing requirements relative to the impact fee process and conduct a public hearing, which is the purpose of this this meeting this evening, or at least a portion of this meeting. And then, as defined by statute, there's also a 90-day wait period before any increase to the impact fees can be assessed following adoption. When we look at a working impact fee facilities plan, there are these typical elements that we address when we conduct any sort of impact fee facilities plan or impact fee analysis. We need to look at demand. We need to look at existing facilities. We need to identify your existing and proposed level of service. Based on those variables, we identify any excess capacity within the system and any new facilities that are necessary to serve the proposed development. And then we need to consider all revenue resources and financing mechanisms as it relates to the construction of that infrastructure. As Don indicated, this infrastructure was constructed by Daybreak, and so we're looking at including that infrastructure through a buy-in and a future facility component for both transportation and water. When we look at an impact fee analysis, we have to determine what the methodology is for determining the impact fee. We look at a proportionate share analysis and evaluation of those funding mechanisms and how that impacts the impact fee. And then we create the impact fee schedule that becomes a part of your impact fee ordinance. As we look at the specific analysis, as Don indicated, there are two areas that we evaluated, service area one, which is the last holdout properties, and service area two, which is referred to as Lark Meadows. What's that?
I just said there's other names.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. As Don and I worked through this, we were going through several names, and it was difficult for me to keep track of service area one and two and all of the different names. But I think we captured that in the final documents with regards to the service areas. In addition, as we look at demand, the demand variables that we evaluated were trips and equivalent residential connections as it relates to water. I'll also point out that included in the impact fee facilities plan and impact fee analysis are memos that were completed by engineers, contract engineers that assisted in the evaluation of the infrastructure proportionality, the trips, and equivalent residential connections, and that was included in the impact fee analysis and the documentation. When we look at level of service, those variables were defined for both transportation based on the grading of roadways, as well as the specific components as it relates to water, the source, storage, and distribution components. Based on those variables, again, we identified excess capacity within the system for transportation that impacted both of those service areas. We also included the appropriate new facility costs as it relates to water for both of those service areas. That fed into these tables that you have and the corresponding impact fee analysis that's been made available to the public. So here again, based on the service different service areas, we have the transportation impact fee that establishes a total cost per trip. That then is multiplied by the different land use types based on the trip statistics for that land use type. In this presentation, I just provided a single family illustration and a multifamily illustration, but in the report, there's a much longer list with regards to land uses and the fees associated with those land uses. In addition, the impact fee and your ordinance has a formula for non-standard uses. There may be a land use that could be assessed a different fee than what's shown on that general schedule. And then for service area one, the water impact fee was calculated based on the fee per equivalent residential connection at $931.90. That same analysis was conducted for service area two, showing the cost per trip and the associated land use fee by type, and also the water fee. In this case, the water fee is higher for service area two at $2,376, and that's on a per ERC basis. In each of these, again, there's a non-standard formula when determining impact fees based on the cost per trip or the ERC variable or the fee per ERC. Based on that, then, based on statute, we're again required to hold a public hearing with regards to these impact fees, and then that 90-day wait period is effective following adoption if you choose to adopt those. As a legislative body, you have the opportunity to adopt, modify, or reject the proposed impact fees. What we've shown here is the maximum allowable impact fee. Again, you can choose to adopt something lower than that, or you're not required to adopt impact fees, but this represents the maximum allowable based on the data. Alrighty, pretty quick crash course on these two properties. Any questions for me? Or do we wait till after public hearing for that part?
Good. I think, yeah, we'll go ahead and open it. Okay. Open it up to a public hearing, and then we'll come back with questions.
Okay.
Okay, well, I'll go ahead and open up the public hearing on Ordinance 2023-02. If anyone would like to address the council, please step forward. Is there anyone online that would like to address the council? If so, please turn on your camera or raise your hand. Seeing none, I will close the public hearing. And I'll open it up to the council with any questions.
I do have a question, Mayor.
Please, Council Member Shelton.
So these facilities, so the road and water infrastructure has already been built, is that correct?
In some cases. Some has been built and some is future to be built.
Okay, and so the facilities that have already been built were built by the developer at Daybreak, is that correct?
Correct.
And so when we collect these fees, do we pay part of that to the developer at Daybreak?
There'll be an agreement with the developer as soon as these go into place, yes.
So part of that fee will go to the developer at Daybreak. Part of it then we'll use to build additional infrastructure, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure I understood.
So, Mayor Pro Tem, may I ask?
Please.
So by adopting this, are we agreeing to those maximum amounts?
Correct.
That were stated? Okay.
Yes.
Which would be what that, makes sense?
That would be full reimbursement, yes.
Okay. All right, thank you.
And
go ahead, Mr. Shelton.
The owner of these properties happens to be the same. And they've been notified. They know that this is going
on. They've received copies of the studies years ago, right? And the updated ones as well. So,
okay. Mr. Tingey, if it's okay,
yep.
At one time the owner asked us to draft, and we did draft a contract where instead of going through this process, the owner of those properties would just contractually pay those fees back, commensurate with exactly what you're seeing, but more recently said it would just work better to do it as an impact fee analysis, which is why we went through this process. But very well aware, has never objected to the concept of what's happening, just preferred this route over the contract that we drafted, what, about 2 years ago, Mr. Ting, year and a half?
2018.
Okay, so my time goes fast. Several years ago we drafted this, so.
Okay.
Yeah, this way it's, you know, we collect impact fees everywhere else in the city, and this is very familiar to the development world and paying impact fees, and this just keeps it straightforward, even though the other way may have been more simpler with a contract, but they opted to go this way.
Okay. I have one
clarifying
question, if I could. And that would be, so the impact fees consider when the water and transportation facilities are actually going to be built. And if it's going to take a certain amount of time, they could be more expensive at that point. Or when are you considering them to be built? I guess that's my real question.
Maybe you have.
Yes, there is some inflation built into that. But if those costs change, then there may be need to amend the impact fee analysis to account for changes in cost.
If there were some delay in the development, then we would have to factor that in.
Yes, which is typical with impact fees. We account for some inflation, but as we've seen with the last couple of years,
absolutely.
It's very difficult.
Right now,
to,
it's horrendous. So.
Yeah, so I would anticipate if there's a change like that, then an amendment would be made to capture that.
Very good. Thank you.
And we Brad will watch that as those construction projects come online, but like the other water tank that has been built, those costs are known and calculated.
Agreed.
I have one more question. Thank you.
Of course, go ahead.
Mayor Pro Tem.
Yes,
really good
just
questions.
Just for my point of reference, could you give us a ballpark of the Lark Meadow property and the Bastion Holdout property? What's the acreage on those two pieces?
So Lark Meadows is 100, 180, and 180. The school district piece, which is the west side of the of Mountain View corridor, is 103 acres, and the Bastion piece on the west, on the east side is about 35 acres.
Okay, and with that, are those properties owned still by the Bastions and then Jordan School District, and then who owns the Lark Meadows? Is that owned by
that's
Mr.
a good
Doug Young.
So Doug has it under contract.
Okay.
But it's still owned by the.
Okay. Yeah. So the 180 is Mr. Young. The 103 is the
Jordan School District,
and then the 35 is.
It's the Bastions, okay. But Doug has an option on that.
Right. I knew that. I just wondered where we were in the process.
Right.
Thank you.
Really good questions.
All right, council members, any other questions?
No. Sorry, Mayor Pro Tem.
Okay. Clarification.
Okay. Actually, it's a public meeting.
Yeah. Okay. All righty. If there's no other questions, I'll go ahead and entertain a motion. Yeah.
Mayor Pro Tem, I make a motion that we approve ordinance 2023-02.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second that.
We have a second. Can we get a roll call vote, please?
Mayor Pro Tem and Council, just I may miss it. You open and close the public hearing, right?
Oh. I believe I did, but I will say it for now. I closed the...
Okay. I was making sure because I was listening for it, and I got a little distracted by work, but... Okay.
You asked for it. Nobody had
it. Yeah, no comments, but...
Okay.
I don't know if you closed it, but...
Case I did not close the public comment. The public comment is closed.
I will still make my same motion.
Okay. Okay. All right. We have a motion, and the second still stands.
Tamara.
Oh yes, the second stands.
All right. Okay. Roll call vote, please.
Councilmember McGuire.
Yes.
Councilmember Zander.
Yes.
Councilmember Marler.
Yes.
Councilmember Shelton.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Harris.
Yes. It's approved unanimously, and we'll move on to our last item, H4, Ordinance 2023-03, adopting an amended and updated impact fee for water and transportation within the Lark Meadows properties, establishing certain policies related to impact fees for water and transportation facilities, establishing service area, and other related matters. Are there any additional items that need to be addressed that were not previously addressed on this from the city staff?
No, the presentation was comprehensive to both.
Okay. All right. Any questions from any of the council members?
None.
Okay. We'll go ahead and open up the public hearing now. Do we have anyone from the public that would like to address? Okay. Seeing no one in person, is there anyone online? If so, please raise your hand. Seeing no one, I will close this public hearing.
Are you ready for a motion?
Ready for a motion.
Mr. Mayor Pro Tem, I'll move that we approve Ordinance 2023-0 as you have stated.
03?
03.
That's what I meant. 03.
Okay. All right, we have a motion. Do we have a second?
I will second that motion.
And we have a second. All right, roll call vote, please.
Councilmember Shelton.
Yes.
Councilmember Marler.
Yes.
Councilmember Zander.
Yes.
Councilmember McGuire.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Harris.
Yes. And that's approved unanimously. Okay, well, now we'll move on to staff reports and calendaring items. Mr. Watcott.
I don't have anything that doesn't understand. I have one comment.
Okay. Mr.
Just a reminder of the Sojo Race Series Deck Dash coming up on February 18th. There is a rucking category, and if more than three of you are going to be there, I need to know so I can notice it. Yep. We will need to notice it. Thank you.
Okay.
That's all I have. I do believe one member of our staff has a comment. Director Rasmussen would like to give you a report back on some signage.
Council, you may remember in December's strategic planning meeting, there were some requests made from council members regarding city signs at city border, and then also some signs along Redwood that have been faded and leaning. So staff has been working on this. We've ordered new signs for all the border signs that are just a little bit bigger, not too big. So they'll be fresh and new and be able to see them a little bit better. So those will be installed over the next week. And then staff has been working on all Collector Street signs to replace the faded ones and straighten the ones out. So that's underway, and the new city welcome signs will be replaced within the next week. So just wanted to let you know there's been follow-up on that and let you know your requests are being handled in regards to that. And if I could just take 1 second, the gentleman that came up and spoke about water conservation rebates, he told me he was an employee of Jordan Valley, which he didn't say up front. So we've looked at this in the past, and we really get more bang for the buck when we manage our own program. We're able to offer our residents more. We get them involved with more rebates rather than have some random employee from Jordan Valley or Utah Water Savers come. We just give them a lot more attention because they're South Jordan residents. And we feel like we get a lot more bang for the buck and provide a better service to them than what Utah Water Savers does. And so that's why we do what we do with our own internal staff. Connor Rauswald, who I know Mr. Shelton had the experience of interacting with, and maybe some of the others. He does a fantastic job, and I would rank what we do and what we provide our residents being top in state. So thank you.
Any other comments, Mr. Luce?
5 minutes or less, I assume. So, SB 174, Senator Fillmore came out. This is the first of the local land use development revisions. I didn't think Representative White's came out also. Kudos to Senator Fillmore. He, as those who were attending the LPC, from where he started and where he was getting input, this is dealing with BNC road funds taking away from us if we don't meet certain things, all sorts of stuff like that. The bill is actually very moderate. It's not exactly where we and the league would want it, but it certainly is much more in line with what we've proposed. There's substantial changes to subdivision process for cities that still have their city council involved in administrative items. We were part of the example of the council doesn't need to deal with all the administrative items, and that this council gave that up. Before I first started here, Mr. Priest was part of that change in about 2006, or right when I started here, right in that window, and Mr. Marver was on the council, and frankly, I don't know that you regret that and that you miss approving every subdivision site plan and that sort of thing. Those are changes going into state law. The penalties are things that we're still negotiating but are much more closer to what we as a league group, and I've been invited to be in part of those small group meetings, can live with, and certainly not where the development community I've been working with wants them, and I'm surprised at where they started. So I can send you links to that if you're curious and you want to read all 30 pages of the, well, sorry, 23 pages of the bill. But I'll just give you a report. Both Representative White and Senator Fillmore are coming out much more moderate than was earlier anticipated. They are listening. Appreciate you as a council talking to Senator Fillmore, inviting him to sit at our table. All of those little things help him understand what his constituency, as he's getting pushed by many different factors, and he's been tasked with being the lead on these things, that what his constituency and the residents of Utah, and what you just heard from residents looking at, you know, six more lots being called high density and what the push of the residents are feeling, that's helped him a lot. So appreciate you guys. There are more bills every day. This, we don't have a lot of big hitting items other than these two, some retirement stuff. Gary's been wonderful and key in helping me keep up with it all. With Melinda going to administrative services, so I want to thank him. Any issues legislatively that you're concerned about, we're looking at all cities wide. What was Molly's number in unfunded mandates and direct costs? Yeah, it's in the tens of millions. On our Council Member Shelton, you're sitting next to me, and Council Member McGuire, it's in tens. We're working on getting a cost to us for each of those. We know that the retirement hit on the public safety bill from Representative Gwynn is about $300,000. And so that would be a direct hit that we'd have to pour into public safety retirement, which would affect then how we do other benefits and things. Mr. Lewis is strategizing on that. It looks like that bill, we have no allies to kill it, meaning the league. And so that bill has a lot stronger chance than it has the, what, 3 or 4 years he's tried to run something similar.
Will that be yearly ongoing 300?
Yeah, that's
right. Increase. Oh, probably
increase. Yeah. Mr. Rockcott, the
built into it, yeah. Increase or
because of the percentage, the way it works. It
just for the record, what's being said is that it does, that is an annual thing that escalates over time. So we've got that. There's a number of unfunded mandates like that, and then direct costs. Revenue reductions with the gas tax is a big one, although they say we're expected to make it up. The issue becomes there's two issues right now at the state level. They have lots of money, but at the local level, through our revenue streams, we don't. And so the state is cutting taxes, and they're thinking everybody's flush. Well, we've got to keep reminding them. So if there's one message as you intersect with them would be just because at the state level there's lots of money, at the local level we're increasing property taxes, we're doing things we have to do because the revenue streams are not there. And then the second thing is revenue neutral on a large basis. Like if they can figure out how to make the cut in the gas tax revenue neutral by registration stuff, does not mean it's equal to everybody. The gravel bill has that effect. The what is the other one? The point of sale is that the gravel or the the sand and gravel. Some cities are going to be winners and some are losers. In the gas, some are going to be winners and losers. And as we saw when our taxes went away with the manufacturing, that loss of $1 million a year and things, those can really hit. And so if you can reinforce to them, we may not want to change too much at once and, you know, be very thoughtful about what we're doing is how it impacts their constituents as you reach out to Representative Cobb, Representative Pulsiver, Representative Tusher, and Senator Fillmore. Those are, well, and Representative Elis. And just to report on him, he has a very small corner of our city on the east side. Representative Elison, he's been key on the homelessness bills and a lot of that. And with all kudos to our mayor, due to his relationships with her and stuff, he's actually been very responsive to us and very good to work with, for representing a small portion and for not knowing us before. And so all of our representatives have been just phenomenally great. So,
Mayor Pro Tem, may I ask a question?
Please.
Couple questions, Ryan. I want to do a follow-up text or phone call to a couple of the representative elected officials that I know well.
Mm-hmm.
With that, if I were to reference to some of these elected gentlemen, if I wanted to reference, hey, as you're looking at tax revenue streams, please consider the effect it has on the city. And I wanted to reference, I'm not as astute as you or Gary or Dustin. Which of you three could I say, hey, please call so-and-so at our city if you have questions?
Gary or Ryan, either way.
Okay.
They see us at different things. I was at lunch with them all last week. Gary, they can call. Just reach out to Gary or Ryan, right. Either way.
Specifically the newer elected official, I would like to say, hey, please open dialogue with
Representative
us.
Cobb.
Yes,
he's been very responsive. If we
so
reach out, he does.
To you
yes,
and chatting with you and talking to you.
Yep.
Good. I'd like to.
And he's asked for details on the ballpark and on some of that information at the HDRG. And so as we're getting that
good
to him.
So he's leaning on the city to get the information as well. We're a source of knowledge for him.
Yes.
Good. And then one other question, Mr. Luce. In the very beginning, you talked about, was it House Bill or Senate Bill?
The Senate Bill 174 is Mr. Phil, or sorry, Senator Fillmore's bill. I'm happy to link that and Representative White's bills to you and send them in a text or an email if you'd like.
Yeah, if you want to give me a quick, I just want to personally text Senator Fillmore.
Yeah, it's not final. It's not where we'd like. My understanding is it got out of committee today. It was in committee while we were in meetings. And so my understanding is it got out of committee today, but he's committed to keep working. Timing it, Mr. Lewis.
The best thing to do is to compliment and thank them for progress made.
For progress made and for continuing the dialogue. We'll assume future actions. But, I mean, we've all had a relationship with Senator Fillmore for a while, and he's always been good to hear us and good to take our calls, but not always looking at things through the same lens, right? He has a different view, which is totally understandable. But he is taking the time to work with the league and all of us who have been part of those discussions to try to see through our lens, and it's reflected in his bills. So all compliments where they're due.
Good. Thank you.
I think he's been doing better that over the years.
Yeah. And that happens over time, and as his relationship with you grows.
Yeah.
I'll be very blunt. They at the legislature, when they get public interaction once or twice a year, It really is hard on them. Representative Perucci was talking about what she went through with her child education, well, her education bill and stuff. And they're not used to people standing, you know, 15, 20 feet from them directly saying, I totally disagree and stuff. Because it's just a different format. It's not that they don't like public comment. It's just It's totally a different format. And so they don't hear like you do. And so when you pass on what you're hearing from residents, not in the NIMBY way, not in the we don't like new people, but in the there are serious concerns with that kind of growth and different things, that helps them get that perspective when they delve into land use, housing, affordability, et cetera. And the only last thing is, I believe Mr. Shelton spoke to it, but there's the starting this Saturday at, is it 9?
It's at 8.
It's at 8. You would make us get up early at 8 o'clock at the hospitals. And I don't believe there's a virtual option, is there?
No. That should all be on your calendars multiple times.
So just to remind you, if you would love to go and get up at 7 something.
On your calendars multiple times. Just delete the one you don't want.
Okay. Mr. Marler, you have a comment?
I just have one comment that I thought was better right now than during the city council report, and that is I happen to have dinner Saturday night, just a couple days ago, with a childhood friend. Name is Paul Pugmire. He actually is the director or CEO, I'm not sure what his title is, of the First Tee of Utah. And
he's a neighbor out there.
He was. He's now moved to Saratoga Springs. But anyway, I thought I'd mention that, and the First Tee of, just so you understand what their mission is really to get youth as early as, you know, second, third grade and on up involved in golf and as recreation and exercise and so on. I think he's done a great job over the years. I just wanted to mention that he felt like the relationship with Jake and all of the other folks there at Mulligan's is just terrific, and is grateful for the relationship, and says that he thinks things are going very, very well. And so I thought I'd just pass that along. I wasn't looking for a positive or a negative. I just said, "Paul, how are things going at the First Tee and Mulligan's?" And he gave me a great report. So, thanks to Jake and your team over there.
Anyone else have any staff reports or comments?
I think I mentioned the one bill that was being proposed that would require us to put an SRO in all of the charter schools. That all language got adjusted, and that's been taken out to be, instead of shall, may. So the fiscal impacts are quite a bit different. The way the bill was reconstructed in its substitute draft, it came out much more favorable for us from a fiscal standpoint. On that one. So the school districts are still on the hook for a lot on that bill. But.
Okay. Any last comments?
I have one last comment.
Okay.
Motion to adjourn.
All right.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any adjourned?